Hello and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, February 25th on Iris. I'm your reader, Aaron. Our first article on the front page, official optimistic on Iowa's economy, state development chief bullish despite COVID challenges, by James Q. Lynch, special to the Globe Gazette, Des Moines. Back in December 2019, Debbie Durham predicted 2020 would be one of the best years of her decades as chief of the Iowa Economic Development Authority. Quote, and we've had some stellar years, unquote, Durham told the Economic Development Appropriations Subcommittee Wednesday. She based her prediction on trade deals that had been signed, positive signals in the farm sector, and a rebound in manufacturing. Quote, little did I know we would deal with a black swan event called COVID, end quote, she said. The coronavirus pandemic was a setback, but Durham remains bullish on Iowa's economy and economic development potential. There are pockets of concern, she said. The hospitality industry, for example, has been, quote, devastated, end quote, by, quote, our ag economy is strong. Our manufacturing is looking to come back extremely strong. Our unemployment numbers are in most every county within reach of where they were before COVID, end quote. Quote, so I would tell you we do not have a recession, Durham said. Overall, our economy did very, very well, end quote. That wasn't the case everywhere, quote, and I will tell you that our phone is ringing from prospects that want to bring manufacturing projects to Iowa from places like Minnesota, from Illinois, end quote. Durham credited that decision made by the legislator and her boss, Governor Kim Reynolds, to keep core industries open through the pandemic. Quote, executive decisions, legislative decisions make a huge difference, end quote, she said. Durham is asking the legislator to continue to show that leadership by buying into the IEDA's manufacturing 4.0 plan that includes making grants to small and medium-sized manufacturers, quote, not John Deere or Collins Aerospace, end quote, for capital investment in smart manufacturing technologies. Also critical for economic development as well as community development is building out broadband infrastructure, Durham said. Although governors haven't been pushing broadband for years, the pandemic showed, quote, there are certainly places that are being left behind. There are broadband deserts, end quote. The pandemic also underscored that broadband is not a luxury. Broadband access and speed are lagging, and Iowa must fully invest so Iowans can learn, work, and access essential services such as healthcare online, Durham said. It's also necessary for Iowa's high-tech jobs, manufacturing, precision, agriculture, education system, and local economies. And Iowa must address its population problem, Durham said. Iowa has more jobs than people to fill them. National statistics show 10,000 baby boomers leave the workforce each day. In Iowa, she said, it's about 100 a day. Our next front page article, vaccination registration options added, by Jared McNett, Globe Gazette. The latest weekly press conference between the city of Mason City and local health officials was all about spotlighting some of the newest options residents have, not just to get registered for the vaccine, but to receive it as well. At the start of Wednesday afternoon's event, Mason City Mayor Bill Shekel shared news that a new Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center COVID-19 vaccine interest list will allow residents to sign up to receive information about vaccination opportunities by going to mercyone.org/vaccine alert and filling out contact information concerning phone number, birthday, and vaccine group. Quote, you don't have to be a Mercy One patient to sign up, end quote, Shekel said. Brittany Erickson, a director at Mercy One at North Iowa, expanded upon what Shekel said by telling those watching the press conference that sign up isn't just limited to those who are 65 and older, and that getting on the contact list doesn't preclude someone from getting their vaccine elsewhere. In addition, people are able to get loved ones on the list. Erickson also made sure to stress during the event that people need to be consistent with their COVID-19 vaccination schedule. Quote, wherever you get your first dose, you'll want to get your second dose, end quote, Erickson said. According to her, Mercy One doesn't have set vaccine doses allotments yet, as those will come through CG Public Health from the state of Iowa. But Erickson said that Mercy One does already have plans for where it will do its vaccinations when the time comes. Quote, we will be doing this at our West Campus, end quote, she said. Once Mercy One finds out if and when they're getting the vaccine doses in a given week, Erickson said that they will then begin contacting people on the sign-up list, about when they can come in to receive their vaccination. The intent is to do shots during the middle part of the week. The CG Public Health Disease Prevention and Health Promotion Manager, Karen Crimmings, said that she thinks what Mercy One is doing will work well with her department's own vaccination efforts at the former Sears building on South Federal Avenue. Quote, "This has been a nice compliment. We can alleviate some of the heartburn of trying to get the vaccine," end quote, Crimmings said. What that heartburn has meant from some residents in recent weeks is calling hundreds of times and not being able to get a vaccination scheduled. Based on numbers from CG Public Health, some 250,000 calls for vaccine scheduling were made the previous week, which would mean more than 5 calls for every resident in Cerro Gordo County if everyone was trying to get registered. Despite that heartburn, the county has made progress in vaccinating those 65 and older, as well as those who work in the school system. Per Crimmings, the most recent data showed that about 28% of the over 65 population in Cerro Gordo County has been vaccinated. Mass clinics for school teachers are starting to wind down, and about 9,000 people have at least gotten their first dose of vaccine. Quote, "We still have some room to go," end quote, she said. As CEG Public Health and Mercy One continue, they'll have help from other community partners as well. Schickel also said near the beginning of the conference that the Elder Bridge Agency on Aging in Mason City can help those 65 and older who may have trouble with registering online. For those who served in the military, Schickel shared that the Mason City VA clinic is now doing vaccinations for veterans. Quote, "It's going to veterans already receiving care from the VA," end quote, Schickel said. The Mason City VA clinic had been at a 50-dose allotment, but Schickel said that is going up to 100 doses. Despite the growing list of vaccination options available to people, reporting has shown that there's still some hesitancy to get vaccinated for COVID-19. Crimmings and Erickson both tried to allay those concerns near the end of the press conference. Quote, "I think if anyone is having specific concerns, call and talk to us about it," end quote, Crimmings said. Our last front page article, State of North Iowa stresses recovery, Mason City event focus on impact of COVID-19 pandemic by Jared McNett, Globe Gazette, before the annual, quote, State of North Iowa, end quote, event kicked off at the Mason City Chamber of Commerce on Wednesday. Clear Lake Bank and Trust Vice President of Consumer Lending, Danielle Pace, could be seen practicing a brief monologue on stage in front of a camera. What Pace said in her two takes worked to summarize the local business community's mindset after a year of contending with all the repercussions brought on by global pandemic. Quote, "We have a long way to go, but by working together, we can get through this, and we can count on more North Iowa businesses to rally," end quote, Pace said. The speakers following her at the event, who represented local government, business organizations, and educational institutions, stuck close to that theme. Near the top of the event, North Iowa Corridor Economic Development Corporation CEO and President Chad Schreck worked to offer some ways in which the North Iowa business community has rallied through the pandemic. Schreck noted that despite the complications caused by COVID-19, multi-dollar expansions with the Kraft Heinz plant and the Golden Grain facilities in Mason City still happened, as did new developments such as the $35 million 50-acre Bushel Boy greenhouse facility and the 133-unit housing complex known as The River, which had its ribbon-cutting ceremony in January. Quote, "Despite all the concerns, our region continued to move forward on various activities," end quote, Schreck said. When businesses struggled to make progress over the past year, Schreck shared that about $435,995 went to 124 area local businesses as part of a small business relief fund. The effort was organized by the governments of Cerro Gordo County, Clear Lake, and Mason City, as well as the North Iowa Corridor Group. Still, such funding couldn't ameliorate the worst of the pandemic. Schreck said near the end of his time that certain economic data for the region is mixed. Cerro Gordo County's unemployment rate for December stood at 3.4%, which is better than the national average of 6.7%, but slightly worse than the state average of 3.1%. Moreover, the average hotel occupancy rate for 2020 was 44.2%, which is almost 20% off from the 2019 average. Mason City Chamber of Commerce President Robin Anderson also emphasized that point about traveling after the event concluded. Quote, some of the things like tourism are going to take a while to recover from, end quote, Anderson said. To her, that means it's imperative for the region to focus even more on the digital economy than it has before. Quote, one of the things we learned in the pandemic is that people can work from anywhere, so why not here, Anderson said. Or why not have enterprises located here that can work from anywhere, end quote. During his time, Tim Putnam, the director of NIACC's John Papajohn Entrepreneurial Center, went through keys that he thought were necessary to thrive in the digital economy of a post-COVID world, create a digital workforce development, have access to digital jobs, offer an inclusive tech culture building, scalable tech and entrepreneurship support, and access to capital. To work toward making that a reality on the local level, Putnam said that his organization is working on securing grant funding. In the actual video that screened for the audience at the chamber, economic leaders mentioned the group work they had done to help local businesses, but they also took care to tip their caps to the work the local businesses had done for themselves over the past year. They shared the stories of Metalcraft switching to making masks and Fairway doing giveaways. The year 2020 came to mean plenty of confusion, but also collaboration, a communal spirit between neighbors, store owners, and public officials. Anderson confessed that she couldn't possibly name everyone who did work in the North Iowa area in the past year, so instead she simply said, quote, you are the ones who will help us rally and recover, end quote. Moving to page 2 for more local news. Mason City man arrested. Burglaries could be rising, by Lisa Gruett, Globe Gazette. Mason City police are warning area residents to keep their houses locked up as spring approaches. Mason City Police Captain Mike McKelvey told the Globe Gazette on Wednesday that the warmer weather often gives way to an increase in thefts and burglaries. He advised citizens to make sure house, garage, and shed doors are closed and to be vigilant of any unusual activity to help prevent crimes of opportunity. McClevey's statements come the morning after a Mason City was arrested on felony burglary charges. According to court documents, 22-year-old Joshua Collings was booked into Cerro Gordo County Jail around 11:45 p.m. Tuesday after witnesses say he was seen going into the garage of a residence on the 800 block of North Jefferson Avenue and exiting with a power tool in his possession. Collings has since been released on bail and is scheduled to make his preliminary court appearance on March 16th. Cerro Gordo's daily COVID-19 update, special to the Globe Gazette, Wednesday, February 24th, data snapshot as of 10 a.m., 361,074 total lab confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Iowa, 5,311 total lab confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Cerro Gordo, 4,715 total lab total recovered in Cerro Gordo, 5,415 deaths in Iowa, 80 deaths in Cerro Gordo. A status report of monitoring and testing of COVID-19 in Iowa, including county-level data provided by the Iowa Department of Public Health, can be found at coronavirus.iowa.gov/current-status. Daily percentage of individuals tested positive February 10th through February 23rd, max 6%, minimum 0%. COVID-19 testing options. Mercy 1 Family Health Line, 641-428-7777. Quick Care Urgent Care Clinic, 641-450-7000. Mason City Community Health Center, 641-450-0601. Waypoint Medical, 641-357-1999. Test Iowa, 641-832-3500. Car part thefts increase, by J.C. Smith, Globe Gazette. While it's always smart to lock up your valuables, there's probably one item you own that you haven't really thought about protecting. It's your catalytic converter. The car part that helps improve fuel efficiency and reduce pollution is also a hot commodity for thieves, as it contains a precious metal whose value has skyrocketed recently. Catalytic converters contain rhodium, a metal that's considered the most valuable in the world right now and is worth $24,000 an ounce. By contrast, gold is worth about $1,800 an ounce. Platinum and palladium are also precious metals that can be found in a catalytic converter. North Iowa Youth Center Director Reagan Banks realized this firsthand recently when he discovered the catalytic converter on the center's truck was missing last week. quote, it's all for the kids and all volunteer, all the money we get, so we don't have the extra money to fix vehicles, end quote, Banks said. The community has rallied to the center's aid, with a former youth center participant donating the labor to fix the truck and other money being put toward a security system. Others are not so lucky, according to Mason City Police Captain Mike McKelvey. While the department could not provide exact numbers, reported car part thefts have seen a drastic increase since late last year, McKelvey said. The main targets are organizations that have trucks that are left outside for long periods of time. Quote, there's big money in it right now, and quote, McKelvey said. The thieves are likely well organized, he said, sliding under the car and quickly cutting out the converter with cordless tools, and they're choosing to strike on the coldest nights when it's far less likely someone will be out and about. The converters can then be taken to metal recycling shops and redeemed for cash. Unless a thief keeps returning to the same recycling shop, it's tough to track down the stolen goods. There isn't much a vehicle owner can do aside from making sure you have motion lighting and security cameras installed, McKelvey said. And warmer weather won't chase away the bad guys either, he said. As the weather warms, another type of theft begins to show up. License plates. Keep your garage doors closed and locked and watch your neighborhood for suspicious activity. Call police right away when you see it. A burglary suspect was arrested this week because neighbors called it in as soon as they saw it, McKelvey said. Quote, they take the plates off your car and put them on their cars, McKelvey said. Best thing you can do is take your plates inside, end quote. Our next article, in-person visits return to homestead assisted living, Globe Gazette staff. Family and friends of individuals at homestead assisted living in Mason City will be allowed to visit in person starting Thursday. Since March, visitation to the assisted living community at 2501 West State Street has been limited to window or virtual visits due to COVID-19, the organization announced Wednesday in a press release. Quote, this might be better than Christmas, and quote, Susan Wiley, homestead executive director at Homestead. Quote, our residents and their families are extremely excited to enjoy one another's company face-to-face again. We just couldn't be happier, end quote. The visitation policy change comes after residents and staff members were offered both doses of the COVID-19 vaccine earlier this year, the press release states. Visitors must follow the guidelines, including, but not limited to, the following. Visits must be scheduled in advance by contacting the community team. All visitors must test a negative for COVID-19 when they arrive for their visit. All visitors are required to wear a face mask while at the community. All visitors must pass a health screening prior to seeing their loved one. For more information on Homestead of Mason City, visit www.midwest-health.com/Mason-City. Our next article, Mercy One to Manage Vaccine Interest List, Globe Gazette staff. A partnership between CG Public Health and Mercy One at North Iowa has resulted in a plan for an additional point of COVID-19 vaccine distribution in Cerro Gordo County. Interested individuals will now be able to sign up to be notified when COVID-19 vaccination opportunities arise through a list that will be maintained by Mercy One North Iowa. This list is open to the public and isn't limited to Mercy One North Iowa patients. To be placed on the vaccine interest list, individuals can complete a secure form found at www.mercyone.org/vaccine-alert. Quote, as vaccine supply increases, CG Public Health will allocate doses to Mercy One at North Iowa to vaccinate those on the waiting list. Mercy One will contact eligible patients by phone and offer an appointment. If you do not respond on the first attempt to reach you, the appointment time will be given to the next person on the list. Mercy One at North Iowa will attempt to contact you the next time vaccine is available, end quote, a press release from CG Public Health explained. Being on a Mercy One's vaccine interest list does not mean a person can't receive a COVID-19 vaccine elsewhere. The CG Public Health release encourages people to continue pursuing additional vaccination options, which includes the CG Public Health's own sign-up. Until COVID-19 vaccines is more widely available, CG Public Health recommends continuing to practice COVID-19 mitigation strategies, including wearing a mask or face covering, social distancing from those outside of your household, washing your hands frequently and with soap and water, and staying home when you feel sick. Our next article, Auditor Issues Report on Floyd County Sexual Assault Response Team, by Jared McNeck, Globe Gazette, a Floyd County-based organization that includes multiple law enforcement and emergency agencies, is the subject of one of the latest audits released by the state of Iowa. Tuesday morning, Iowa Auditor Rob Sands' office released a report stating that the Floyd County Sexual Assault Response Team, SART, had $1,524.40 of improper disbursements, $113.47 of unsupported disbursements, and $313 of undeposited collections from March 1, 2016 through July 31, 2020. According to the audit, the investigation was undertaken because of concerns about financial transactions processed by the former Floyd County Attorney's Office Victim Witness Coordinator Janelle Herman. The report details that in that role, Herman worked with Floyd County's SART and handled all financial transactions related to the account. Since SART isn't a part of Floyd County's government, it receives funding through other means of and handles financial matters outside of the county's accounting system. Per the audit, the sole revenue source for SART is an annual 5K fundraiser, which includes registration fees and donations from sponsor businesses. Herman fundraising activity for the event and reached out to businesses to secure potential sponsorships. After the county attorney's office let Herman go in May 2020, the audit states that, quote, an initial review of SART financial activity by a representative of the Floyd County Sheriff's Office identified possible undeposited collections and personal purchases made with SART funds by Ms. Herman, end quote. Once Herman was notified of the issue, the audit notes that she returned $640 to the county attorney's office and apologized for using the SART debit card instead of her own. Quote, this was a mistake and not on purpose, end quote, Herman writes in a note included at the end of the audit. Quote, when I realized it, I was trying to get the money to pay it back, end quote. In response to the matter, the audit includes recommendations for what SART can do in the future to avoid such incidents. As it is common in such reports, one recommendation is to have a segregation of duties, while another is to perform independent reviews of bank reconciliations. The audit also suggests, quote, ensuring all disbursements are properly supported, reviewed, and approved, end quote. Our next article, Man Fined for Wetlands Destruction on Des Moines River, Associated Press, Ottumwa, Iowa. An Iowa man who filled in wetlands along the Des Moines River in order to build a recreational vehicle campground has reached an agreement with federal officials for violating federal clean water laws, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency said Tuesday. Russell Kirk and his companies, Ottumwa North Shore LLC and Breaking Gate LLC, filled in about 5 acres of protected wetlands and conducted unauthorized bank stabilization along about 2,000 feet of the Des Moines River near Ottumwa without obtaining a federal permit, the EPA said. The work was done between 2013 and 2016. The U.S. Justice Department filed a civil complaint in 2018 after Kirk refused to repair illegal discharges of degraded and fill materials at the campground. As part of the settlement, Kirk and his companies agreed to pay a $15,000 penalty and purchase nearly $230,000 in, quote, mitigation bank, end quote, credits at a local wetland preserve. They also agreed to remove unauthorized materials in wetlands and along the impacted riverbank and to conserve the protect about 17 acres of regulated wetland from a future development on the defendant's property. Our next article, FDA Johnson & Johnson vaccine is effective, Associated Press, Washington. Johnson & Johnson's single-dose vaccine offers strong protection against severe COVID-19, according to an analysis released Wednesday by U.S. regulators that sets the stage for a final decision on a new and easier-to-use shot to help tame the pandemic. The long-anticipated shot could offer the nation a third vaccine option and help speed vaccinations by requiring just one dose instead of two. Food and Drug Administration scientists confirmed that overall the vaccine is about 66% effective at preventing moderate to severe COVID-19 and about 85% effective against the most serious illness. The agency also said J&J's shot is safe. The analysis is just one step in the FDA's evaluation process. On Friday, the agency's independent advisors will debate whether the evidence is strong enough to recommend the shot. With that advice, the FDA is expected to make a final decision within days. The COVID-19 death toll in the U.S. topped 500,000 this week, and the vaccination drive has been slower than hoped, hampered by logistical and weather delays. So far, about 44.5 million Americans have received at least one dose of vaccine made by Pfizer or Moderna, and nearly 20 million of them have received the second dose requiring for full protection. Tests showed the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines were 95% effective at protection against symptomatic COVID-19. Dr. Paul Offit, a vaccine expert at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, is part of the FDA advisory panel that will scrutinize the J&J data on Friday and cautions that none of the vaccines have been directly compared. Still, he was encouraged that one dose of the J&J vaccine appears as good as preventing serious illness as its two-dose competitors. Quote, this is a vaccine to prevent you from going to the hospital and dying at a level that's certainly comparable, end quote, to the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, he said. J&J tested its single-dose option in 44,000 adults in the U.S., Latin America, and South Africa. Different mutated versions of the virus are circulated in different countries, and the FDA analysis cautioned that it's not clear how well the vaccine works against each variant, but J&J previously announced that the vaccine worked better in the U.S., 72% effective against moderate to severe COVID-19, compared with 66% in Latin America and 57% in South Africa. South Africa recently began giving the J&J vaccine to frontline health workers on a test basis after deciding that a vaccine from rival AstraZeneca had not shown strong enough study results against the particularly concerning variant spreading there. Looking back, today is Thursday, February 25th, the 56th day of 2021. There are 309 days left in the year. Today's highlight in history, on February 25th, 1986, President Ferdinand Marcos fled the Philippines after 20 years of rule in the wake of a tainted election. Corazon Aquino assumed the presidency. On this date in 1793, President George Washington held the first cabinet meeting on record at his Mount Vernon home. Attending were Secretary of State Thomas Jefferson, Treasury Secretary Alexander Hamilton, Secretary of War Henry Knox, and Attorney General Edmund Randolph. In 1901, United States Steel Corp. was incorporated by J.P. Morgan. In 1913, the 16th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, giving Congress the power to levy and collect income taxes, was declared in effect by Secretary of State Philander Chase Knox. In 1919, Oregon became the first state to tax gasoline at 1 cent per gallon. In 1950, Your Show of Shows, starring Sid Caesar, Imogene Coca, and Carl Reiner, and Howard Morris, debuted on NBC TV. In 1954, Gamal Abdel Nasser became Egypt's prime minister after the country's president, Mohamed Naguib, was effectively ousted in a coup. In 1964, Muhammad Ali, then known as Cassius Clay, became world heavyweight boxing champion as he defeated Sonny Liston in Miami Beach. In 1983, playwright Tennessee Williams was found dead in his New York hotel suite. He was 71 years old. In 1991, during the Persian Gulf War, 28 Americans were killed when an Iraqi Scud missile hit a U.S. barracks in Dairen, Saudi Arabia. In 1994, American-born Jewish settler Baruch Goldstein opened fire with an automatic rifle inside the Tomb of the Patriarchs in the West Bank, killing 29 Muslims before he was beaten to death by worshippers. In 2010, in Vancouver, the Canadian woman beat the United States 2-0 for their third straight Olympic hockey title. In 2018, China's official news agency said the country's ruling Communist Party had proposed scraping term limits for China's president, appearing to lay the groundwork for Xi Jinping's to rule as president beyond 2023. China's rubber stamp lawmakers approved that change on March 11th. 10 years ago, the Obama White House broke decades of tradition, naming Jeremy Bernard the first man to ever serve as social secretary in the female-dominated East Wing. Susie Rotolo, artist and girlfriend of singer Bob Dylan, who was his lyrical muse when he came to prominence in the early 1960s, died in New York at age 67. Moving to the obituaries, J. Gordon Christensen, August 12th, 1926 to February 19th, 2021. J. Gordon Christensen, 94, of Rochester, passed away peacefully on Friday, February 19th, 2021 at the Charter House home he loved. Gordon was born August 12th, 1926 in Scarville, Iowa, to John and Alice Peterson Christensen. He was proud to have grown up on Iowa farms and loved to return to the area often. He graduated as valedictorian from Scarville High School in 1944 and attended Luther College in Decorah, Iowa until he was drafted into the Navy in June 1945, serving until August 1946 due to the end of World War II. Shortly after returning to and then graduating from Luther College in 1949, Gordon married the love of his life, Agnes, with whom he spent 63 wonderful years. Both were teachers and started their careers in Ledyard, Iowa, 1949 to 53, where Gordon began his school administration career as principal before obtaining his master's degree from Drake University and beginning classes toward his doctorate. Gordon held superintendent positions in Seneca, Iowa, Grafton, Iowa, St. Agnes, Iowa, and lastly, North Winneshuck School near Decorah, Iowa, for 20 years. He then managed apartments for his good friend Luther professor Weston Noble for 10 years until finally retiring. Gordon was a dedicated servant to his community, church, family, and his beloved Luther College. He spent decades on the Luther College Alumni Council and received the Luther Distinguished Service Award. He belonged to the Lions Club for 38 years and spent 14 years in officer roles for his Lutheran Brotherhood Chapel. One of his greatest passions was his involvement as president of the Decorah Valdres Norway Student Exchange Program, where over 250 students from Decorah and Valdres experienced each other's cultures over 25 years. He made many trips to Norway to see these friends, including Johanna Fogelsteg, a student who had spent a year in their home. His involvement in church was of great importance to him, including Good Shepherd Lutheran in Decorah and Zumbro Lutheran in Rochester, where he was active in Bible study, men's group, senior club, and volunteering in the kitchen, making lefse for the annual holiday bazaar. His final volunteer service was at the Mayo Clinic Heritage Museum, where he cherished his position as a guide to visitors from all over the world, even into his 90s. Gordon is survived by daughter Marcia, spouse Charles Malum, and daughter Mary, spouse James Hansen, both of Rochester. He adored his 5 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren, including Jennifer, spouse Eric Richardson, and daughters Lena and Emmy of Bend, Oregon, Andrew Brum of Santa Monica, California, and Amanda, Matthew, and Lizzie Henson, all of Rochester. The family had video calls together up until 5 days before he passed, which he greatly looked forward to. He is also survived by his sister Donna, Reverend Clarence Balson of Clear Lake, Iowa, sister-in-law Ethel Christensen of Forest City, Iowa, and nieces and nephews and cousins that he so loved. He was preceded in death by his wife Agnes, daughter Joan, brother Paul Christensen, and parents and numerous and other friends from across the world. There will be a celebration of life at Zumbro Lutheran Church after this summer when safe to do so. The family wishes to thank the caregivers at Charter House Assisted Living for their loving care. Memorials can be directed to Zumbro Lutheran Church, Rochester, Minnesota, Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, or Brighter Tomorrows Incorporated, a nonprofit serving families facing childhood cancer. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have left the world a much better place. Blessed be his memory. Rand Franz and Vine Funeral Home is honored to be serving the Christensen family. To share a special memory or condolence, please visit www.randfranzendivinefh.com. Philip Elton Hungett. Philip Elton Hungett, 88, formerly of Corwith, Iowa, died February 22, 2021, after a brief period of rapidly declining health at Westview Care Center, Britt, Iowa, where he had been a resident since 2018. Plans for a safe gathering in good weather will be forthcoming at the appropriate time. www.oakcrestfuneralservices.com. Philip Elton Hungett, 88, formerly of Corwith, Iowa, died February 22, 2021, after a brief period of rapidly declining health at Westview Care Center, Britt, Iowa, where he had been a resident since 2018. Plans for a safe gathering in good weather will be forthcoming at the appropriate time. www.oakcrestfuneralservices.com. Barbara Beatrice Wood Davis, April 17th, 1934 to January 4th, 2021. Barbara Beatrice Wood Davis of Cordialone, Idaho, left her earthly home on January 4th, 2021. Barbara was born in Clear Lake, Iowa on April 17th, 1934. While calling it Cordialone home for the last 23 years, Barb, as she was known to most, forever held Clear Lake in her heart after reminiscing about her childhood times on the farm, being a Clear Lake High School cheerleader, remembering the lifelong friendships that began there, and especially when sharing stories of her loving family. Barb is survived by her children, Jeffrey, spouse Deborah Davis, Kimberly Quintana, and Michelle, spouse Derek Vargas, her grandchildren Brennan and Ryan Davis, Adam, Amanda, Andrew, and Aaron Roberts, Ashley, Derek II, Jordan, and Alyssa Vargas, her great-grandchildren Megan Roberts, Olivia Ames, Evangeline Roberts, and Nolan Mooney, her sister Pauline Rumelit, and numerous nieces and nephews. Barb was preceded in death by her devoted husband and best of everything for over 50 years, Leslie, father Harvey Wood, and mother Blanche Wood, brothers Walter Wayne Wood and Dale Wood, and sisters Catherine Leskowski and Florence Arlene Barber. The immediate family held a private memorial on January 31st, 2021. Moving to sports, prep boys basketball, Lake Mills completes comeback, Bulldogs avoid playoff upset to move on, Globe Gazette staff. Down by as many as 11 points in the third quarter, the Lake Mills boys basketball team needed something to change. Bishop Garrigan had played tough in the Class 1A District 3 championship game up until that point, but the second-ranked Bulldogs weren't going to go down without a fight. The Bulldogs played their best down the stretch, outscoring the Golden Bears in the fourth quarter to earn a 63-59 win and a second consecutive postseason district title. Late in the game, it was senior Deshaun Lennon and junior Bennett Bergers free throws that iced the victory. Lennon and senior Caleb Bacon each finished with 15 points on the night. Junior Wyatt Helming had 14, and Berger was also in double figures. The Bulldogs shot 50% from the field. Lake Mills stayed perfect and improved 24-0 on the season. The Bulldogs play West Fork for a chance at their second straight state tournament appearance at 7 p.m. on Saturday in Forest City. Boys Class 1A District 4, fast-paced offense serves West Fork well, high-scoring Warhawks making a state tournament run by Gunnar Davis, Globe Gazette. When the West Fork boys basketball team gets hot, look out. Unlike most small-town teams in Class 1A, the Warhawks play a high-tempo, fast-paced style of basketball that's hard to prepare for. That pace of play and style of offense was on full display on Tuesday night in an 83-51 rout of Janesville in the Class 1A District 4 Championship in Charles City. The Warhawks scored 29 points in the first quarter alone and continued to extend their lead throughout the rest of the contest. Quote, "We try to push the ball," West Fork head coach Frank Goins said, "and even our big guy is quick, but we really emphasize it with drills and practice, up-tempo kind of drills. I think our kids are in pretty good shape. That's the way the kids like to play," end quote. When the Warhawks played at Wells Fargo Arena last year, they set a single-game record for most three-pointers in a state tournament game. With many of the same faces on this year's team, the tempo hasn't slowed down. If anything, it's picked up. The Warhawks have scored 79 points or more 6 times this season. Quote, "Team-wise, the best thing is we all have faith in each other," end quote, said senior forward Jacob Washington. Quote, "If we said, no, we're not going to pass it to that guy because we don't think he'll make the shot. No, we don't think that way. We give up shots for better shots, and we're very unselfish, I think. That's what brings it together," end quote. According to senior guard Kale Weaver, the get-out-and-go mindset was developed long before high school. Quote, "You have to run the ball, and that's how we've been successful growing up," Weaver said. "Scoins knows that we can push the ball, and that's what he pushes for as well. That's when we play our best basketball, is when we're running it," end quote. The Warhawks will need to dictate the pace if they are to earn the upset win over number 2 Lake Mills on Saturday in the sub-state championship. The Bulldogs are big, physical, and can score in multiple ways, but West Fork will be ready. Although the Warhawks were defeated in conference play, the boys in red and black purposefully played one of the toughest non-conference schedules in the state. The Warhawks competed against ranked and larger schools like Clear Lake, Iowa Falls, Olden and Dyke New Hartford so that when it comes to time to play in the postseason, the Warhawks have that big game experience to lean back on. Quote, "You really can't measure yourself until you've played the best," Koskoen said. "We try to play the best that we can, and I think we've held up pretty well. Hopefully we're ready to go on Saturday," end quote. Between a 19-4 Janesville team and an undefeated Lake Mill squad, this season's road to Wells Fargo Arena seems like it's tougher than last year. But in order to be the best, you've got to beat the best. And if the Warhawks play like they did against Janesville, Washington has no reason to believe that his teammates can't get the job done over the weekend. Quote, "With the energy and the effort, no matter what the score is, I think that we're just got to play confident and play as a team," Washington said. "No, I don't think that there's a reason why we shouldn't win. Not that they're not a good team. I just definitely think we're capable," end quote. West Fork will look to qualify for its second consecutive state tournament against Lake Mills in the sub-state championship at 7 p.m. on Saturday in Forest City. And our last sports article, Boys Class 2A, Substate 3. Miller makes final shot for Forest City. Indians senior ends a career one game shy of state tournament by Shane Lance Globe Gazette. Despite the loss, it was hard for the Forest City boys basketball team to be mad about the ending of the Tuesday night's two-point defeat in the Class 2A, Substate 3 semifinals. Sure, the 57-55 loss to Applington Parkersburg was a disappointing end to a competitive game and a solid season for the Indians. But in the closing seconds, Forest City star senior Noah Miller took the final shot, a three-pointer that swished through the net as time expired on his high school career. Though they were disappointed with the season-ending defeat, the coach and Miller's fellow players agreed that it was fitting that he made the season's final bucket. Quote, "It's a kid that deserves to have that final three in Des Moines, but unfortunately it didn't happen," and quote, Forest City head coach Dan Rosacker said. Quote, "He is as good as any player I have coached. He's right up there with all of them. Work ethic, coachability, all the intangibles you want. He's a great player," end quote. Earlier this season, Miller became only the seventh player in the program history to score at least 1,000 career points and was the team's leading scorer each of the past three seasons. Miller is a beloved figure in the Indians program and spent several minutes after the game accepting congratulations and hugs from his family and friends. Junior Carter Brockhoff gave Miller credit for helping turn him into one of the team's top players and for being a steady leader over the past several years. Brockhoff finished as the team's third leading scorer, behind only Miller and junior Andrew Snyder. Quote, "He means a lot," Brockhoff said. "He was a great leader for me and the rest of the guys. He really turned me into the shooter that I am, working with me. I am going to miss him, and I am going to miss senior Brandon Lieber, too. They're good leaders, good teammates. It's tough when you lose guys like that," end quote. The team went into the game as underdogs, but managed to stay within the number 8 Falcons until the very end. In the first quarter, the Indians pulled ahead 11-10, but after scoring 13 points in the second, AP pulled ahead at halftime by a 23-20 score. The Falcons widened the lead at the beginning of the third quarter with a 9-3 scoring run, but the Indians ended the frame with a 10-3 run of their own. At the beginning of the fourth, Forest City led by a point 36-35. In the fourth quarter, the Falcons put up 22 points to clinch it. With 30 seconds left, AP led the Indians by 6 points, but a 3-pointer from Brockhoff pulled Forest City within 3. After a foul, Falcons senior Owen Thomas sank a pair of free throws to put his team ahead 57-55. With the time expiring, Miller took the ball for one last Arcane journey from 3-point land. It was a bit of a strange sight, with the ball swishing through the net as the buzzer sounded, and the other team flooding the floor in celebration. But for Miller, it meant a lot to the end on a high note. Quote, "It was really meaningful," Miller said. "To go out with a make and a three-pointer, I've had quite a bit of those. It felt good," end quote. With 9 seniors graduating, the Indians have some holes to fill before next season. The team will return 2 of their top 3 scorers, though, and Brockhoff and fellow junior Andrew Snyder, leaving plenty of room for optimism in 2022. Quote, "Those guys put in work just like everybody else did this year." Miller said, I'm not worried about them having a problem next year. Carter, Andrew, Truman, Cudson, those guys will lead the guys that maybe didn't get an opportunity this year. They'll have a good season next year, end quote. With the win, Applington and Parkersburg will play on Saturday against Denver for a spot at the state tournament. Forest City's season ends with a 14-10 overall record. The Indians are still searching for their first state tournament appearance since 2015. Quote, it's been an honor to play for this Forest City program over the past 4 years, Miller said. All my teammates and my coaches, I love them all, whether that was when I was a freshman or this year when I am a senior. It hurts a little more when you are a senior just to feel this emotion. It sucks that we came up short, end quote. Oh, we have one more local article. OCH's Grimm commits to North Central College. Green Devils athlete earned medals 2 of 3 years at state by Shane Lance Globe Gazette. Emma Grimm is not done yet. On Wednesday, the OCH senior wrestler announced that her career on the mat will continue at the next level with a commitment to North Central College. Grimm announced her decision in a Twitter post saying, quote, 3 wrestling seasons just didn't quite feel like enough. Here's to 4 more years of doing what I love most at North Central College. Thank you, everyone, end quote. Over the past 3 years, Grimm emerged as one of the state's top female wrestlers, with 3 top 6 finishes at the state tournament and 2 state medals. Her junior year, Grimm finished 2nd overall at state at 126 pounds and finished 3rd this past season after losing to Avery Meyer of Waverly Shell Rock in the state semifinals. North Central College is an NCAA Division III school located in Naperville, Illinois. The Cardinals finished 6th at the 2020 National Championships and had 5 All-Americans. They are led by coaches Joe Norton and Zach Cook. Norton is the former head wrestling coach at Knox College, Galesburg, Illinois, while Cook was previously an assistant coach at the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse. Grimm made a visit to the school earlier this year and connected with, quote, intensity, end quote, that she saw in the coaches and other wrestlers. Quote, watching them practice, you could just tell that they want to be there to get better, Grimm said. They're ranked 5th in the country, just got 1st at regionals, and you can just tell that they work really hard and are dedicated to the sport, end quote. The program is still relatively new, as the Cardinal women first took to the mat in 2019 and 2020, and Grimm will be the program's 1st female wrestler from the state of Iowa. Quote, it's pretty exciting, Grimm said. I'm pretty proud to say that I'll be the 1st Iowa girl that they have there. Hopefully, it will make more follow and bring more awareness of how many schools have women's wrestling and get some more to add it even, end quote. As a team leader and one of the Green Devils' hardest workers, OCH coach Ryan Frank has no doubt that Grimm will succeed at the college level. The style of wrestling will change in the transition from high school to the college level, but Grimm has been putting in the work since the state tournament ended in late January. Quote, for the past 3 years, Emma Grimm has lived in the weight room, Frank said. Strength-wise, I think she'll be better than ever when she's up there. Wrestling style-wise, it'll be a little difficult, different style, but she is transitioning into the freestyle, end quote. The North Central women's team is currently 2-2 on the season. They will compete on March 6th at the National Collegiate Women's Wrestling Championships on March 6th in Tiffin, Ohio. Moving to the nation and world news, Capitol breach, chief police warned before riot, invasion worse than expected, panel plan draws Republican fire by Michael Balsamo and Noman Merchant, Associated Press, Washington. Capitol Police knew armed extremists were primed for violence at the iconic building on January 6th and even provided officers with assault rifles to protect lawmakers, the acting chief acknowledged Wednesday. But the wild invasion of the Capitol was far worse than police expected, leaving them unprepared to fight it off. A day earlier, her predecessor as chief testified that police expected an enraged but more typical protest crowd of Donald Trump supporters. But acting chief Yogonda Pittman said intelligence collected ahead of the riot prompted the agency to take extraordinary measures, including the special arming of officers, intercepting radio frequencies used by the invaders, and deploying spies at the Ellipse rally where President Donald Trump was sending his supporters marching to the Capitol to, quote, fight like hell, end quote. Pittman's testimony, submitted ahead of a House hearing on Thursday, provides the most detailed account yet of the intelligence and preparations by U.S. Capitol Police ahead of the insurrection when thousands of pro-Trump support rioters invaded the Capitol, aiming to stop Congress from certifying Joe Biden's election victory over Trump. 3 days earlier, on January 3rd, Capitol Police distributed an internal intelligence assessment warning that militia members, white supremacists, and other extremist groups were likely to participate, that demonstrators would be armed, and that it was possible they would come to the Capitol to try to disrupt the vote, Pittman says. Quote, based on the assessment, the department understood that this demonstration would be unlike the previous demonstrations held by protesters with similar ideologies in November and December 2020, end quote, Pittman says in her prepared remarks. But at the same time, she argues police didn't have enough intelligence to predict the violent insurrection that resulted in 5 deaths, including that of a Capitol Police officer. They prepared for trouble, but not an invasion. Officers were vastly outnumbered as thousands of rioters descended on the building. Meanwhile, Republican leaders in the House and Senate say a proposed plan for an independent commission to study the Capitol insurrection is overly titled toward Democrats, arguing that the panel should have an even party split like the one formed to study the September 11th terrorist attacks. Our next article, 3 nominated to U.S. Postal Board. President's actions could bring more scrutiny on Postmaster General, by Anthony Esquire, Associated Press. President Joe Biden on Wednesday nominated 3 postal experts to the governing board on the U.S. Postal Service, a move that could alter the course of an agency grappling with delivery delays and rumored cuts under its embattled Republican leader. If confirmed by the Senate, the Board of Governors nominees would bring additional Democratic scrutiny on Postmaster General Louis DeJoy, a major GOP donor whose tenure has been marred by slow service and politicization. The nominees are Ron Strowman, a former deputy postmaster general, Amber McReynolds, a male voting advocate who leads the nonprofit National Vote at Home Institute, and Anton Hajar, the former general counsel of the American Postal Workers Union. A White House announcement of the move came just after a sometimes tense congressional hearing with DeJoy about the agency's ailing financial health. Democrats have been pressing Biden to nominate a slate of potential governors who could oust DeJoy. The 6 members who currently comprise the board were nominated by President Donald Trump. A spokesman for the Postal Service said it, quote, will welcome all qualified members to the Board of Governors, end quote. DeJoy has come under heavy criticism for a series of operational changes that slowed mail before the 2020 elections. In our next article, Biden orders review of U.S. supply chains, fragility of systems revealed repeatedly during pandemic, by Josh Boak and Tom Krischer, Associated Press, Washington. President Joe Biden signed an executive order Wednesday intended to boost manufacturing jobs by strengthening U.S. supply chains for advanced batteries, pharmaceuticals, critical minerals, and semiconductors. The United States has become increasingly reliant on imports of these goods, a potential national security and economic risk that the Biden administration hopes to address with the planned 100-day review. And the possibility of increased domestic production. However, Biden will also look to work with international partners to ensure a stable and reliable supply chain. Quote, these are the kinds of common sense solutions that all Americans can get behind, Biden said at a White House ceremony. Quote, it's about resilience, identifying possible points of vulnerabilities in our supply chains, and making sure we have the backup alternatives or workarounds in place, end quote. White House officials emphasized that the order would help to create manufacturing jobs, a promise made by past presidents with decidedly mixed results. There are 12.2 million manufacturing jobs in the United States, down from 17 million in 2000, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Biden's teams declined to say how many manufacturing jobs could be created, only that the benefits would extend past factory work. Digest, Biden lifts bans on new green cards. San Diego, President Joe Biden on Wednesday lifted a freeze on green cards issued by his predecessor during the pandemic that lawyers said was blocking most legal immigration to the United States. Former President Donald Trump last spring halted the issuance of green cards until the end of 2020 in the name of protecting the coronavirus-racked job market, a reason that Trump gave to achieve many of the cuts to legal immigration that eluded him before the pandemic. Trump on December 31st extended those orders until the end of March. Trump deemed immigrants a, quote, risk to the U.S. labor market, end quote, and blocked by their entry to the United States in issuing Proclamation 10014 and Proclamation 10052. Biden stated in his proclamation Wednesday that shutting the doors on illegal immigrants, quote, does not advance the interests of the United States, end quote. Budget nominee faces new hurdles, Washington. The increasingly slim odds and surprisingly thin outreach from the White House for Neera Tanden's nomination as head of the Office of Management and Budget are raising growing questions about how long the president will stick with her in an early test of how he will use his limited potential political capital. In the latest sign of trouble for Tanden, two Senate panels slated to take up her nomination, the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee and the Budget Committee, both postponed meetings scheduled for Wednesday. For the third straight day, the White House batted off questions about the Tanden's path to confirmation after at least one key Democrat and multiple Republicans came out against her. Facing steep headwinds, President Joe Biden must make the calculation whether it's worth expending political capital to defend Tanden as he faces tough fights with a divided Congress on everything from his $1.9 trillion coronavirus aid package to coming legislative packages on infrastructure and immigration. Briefly, pandemic relief. Republicans rallied solidly Wednesday against Democrats' proposed $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief bill as lawmakers awaited a decision by the Senate's parliamentarian that could bolster or potentially kill a pivotal provision hiking the federal minimum wage. Interior, Democratic Senator Joe Manchin, chair of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, said Wednesday that he will vote for New Mexico Representative Deb Haaland to serve as Interior Secretary, clearing the way for her likely approval as the first Native American to head a cabinet agency. Floyd case. Several witnesses have been subpoenaed to appear before a federal grand jury considering charges against former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who is already facing state murder charges in the death of George Floyd, a person familiar with the matter told the Associated Press on Wednesday. Cuomo, a former member of Governor Andrew Cuomo's administration who previously accused him of sexual harassment, offered new details Wednesday, saying he once kissed her on the lips without consent. Putin, Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered his nation's top counterintelligence agency Wednesday to redouble its efforts to address what he described as Western attempts to destabilize Russia. The United States and its NATO allies have rejected similar previous claims. CIA, William Burns, President Joe Biden's nominee to run the CIA, told lawmakers Wednesday that he would keep politics out of the job and deliver, quote, unvarnished, end quote, intelligence to politicians and policymakers, even if they don't want to hear it. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, February 25th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day.